Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with homework? Are they asking questions that you're not sure you can fully answer? IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids. It covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed. This program will improve your kids' grades. Studies done in almost every state in the country, the kids who had IXL are consistently doing better. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid no matter the age or personality. And it doesn't have to eat up all your time. One subscription gets you everything for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. So don't miss out. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/audio. Visit IXL.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
You will dream it.
Yeah.
Welcome to Who Weekly, the podcast where you'll learn everything you need to know about the celebrities you don't. I'm Bobby Finger.
I'm Lindsay Weber.
And you are listening to Who's There, our weekly call-in show where we take your questions, comments, and concerns at 619-WHO-THEM, and here are some calls.
She did it.
Andrea Riseborough did it. Woo! Couldn't tell you anything about what she's in. Forgot everything about her already. But Andrea Riseborough did it.
Academy Award nominee, Ana de Armas.
Hey, Lindsay, Bobby, Timmy, long time listener, too many time caller. I literally called last night. And I'm sure you're getting a million calls about this, but she did it. Frances Fisher did it. She got Andrea Riseborough nominated. Wow. Wow. All right. Bye, y'all.
The way that we have brainwashed hooligans into cheering for one of the worst performances I've seen ever in my life, Ana de Armas in Blonde, and a movie I've never seen and a woman I've barely heard of, Andrea Riseborough, into Leslie.
I didn't even want anyone to cheer for Andrea Riseborough. In fact, I think it's funny, but like, I'm here to cheer for Ana de Armas, sure. I'm not cheering for Andrea Riseborough.
So you didn't watch Blonde, right?
No, I still haven't watched Blonde. I watched To Leslie.
That's why. I wish I hadn't watched Blonde because I would be over here freaking Ana de Armas updatings. Mm-hmm. I would be like rah-rahing. I unfortunately like subjected myself to watching it. Now like a little part of me is like, you know, she was so bad. That movie sucks ass. Don't support it. Like I want to be dumb. I want to be brainless. I want to have no brain cells. I want to cheer for her because the idea that Ana de Armas is nominated for an Oscar, like, that's what?
Tell March 2020 us that Ana de Armas is about to get nominated for an Oscar.
Oh my God. Remember how we were like, Ana de Armas, like, she can't catch a break. All these things that she's in are like, turn out to be awful or like never come out. Like Blonde or Deepwater and da-da-da. It's like, it turned out Blonde was actually the greatest decision of her career.
I still think Deepwater is an extremely good movie, and she's extremely good in it.
I think you're exaggerating.
No, I'm not. I love Deepwater. I've watched it 3 times. I think it's great, and I think she's great in it.
Well, maybe you would like Blonde, even though it's a pro-life, incredibly bad movie. Maybe you'd love it. I don't know. If you loved Deepwater, maybe you'd think Blonde slays.
Yeah, and then once the shock and surprise of Andrea and Anna's nominations were off, I was like, well, fuck. Now I feel awful for Danielle Deadweiler and Viola Davis, who gave 2 of my favorite performances of the year in movies I actually like.
Only 2 of the women on this list truly gave performances that are worthy.
Oh, of the actress list, the actual nominees.
If I was like actually putting on my I'm being a serious person hat and not like being a troll, which honestly you should treat the Oscars like a troll.
You'd say Michelle Yeoh and Kate Blanchett.
I would say those are the only 2 people I think there who actually.
I wouldn't say Michelle Williams.
I'm not saying her name, but I think you were there. I'm sorry, Mitzi. Mitzi and Marilyn can stay. Actually, very similar characters, but they can stay together off my list.
Mitzi and Marilyn are not on either of our lists.
They're actually similar, to be fair. I mean, the Academy loves a fragile blonde woman, you know?
Whatever. This isn't an Oscar podcast. I just can't believe that this is the follow-up. I really can't believe this is the follow-up. Anna and Andrea crashing the party, as the New York Times says in their list of snubs and surprises. The section about Andrea Riseborough was titled Andrea Riseborough Crashes the Party. It would be a big day for Who Weekly if Ana de Armas and Paul Mescal won Oscars in the same night.
I know. Do it for us, if not for... Who cares? What is the purpose otherwise? Do it for us. If I'm not doing it for me, for my career, who cares?
Yeah.
What do I care if Cate Blanchett deserves it or Michelle Yeoh deserves it? Oh, whatever.
Okay. So many calls about Andrea Riseborough. Is it Andrea or Andrea? She is English.
She wants you to say Andrea. What movie is that from, Andrea?
It's from Devil Wears Prada.
Yes, thank you. Okay, go ahead. Thanks.
I saw a tweet yesterday that was like from some, I don't know. I don't even
hashtag
know what subsection of Twitter this person was in. But it was like, never forget what Andrea Riseborough wore to the Mandy premiere at like Sundance in 2017 or whatever. And I was like, who in the absolute fuck remembers what Andrea Riseborough wore to the Mandy premiere at like South by Southwest or
something?
She wore like all red and her shirt like had words on it.
Stunning. It had what did it say?
It had something like sassy on it. It said something sassy. Oh, here it is.
Stop.
And she had like a, you seen Ocean's 13?
Yes, of course.
She had a haircut that reminded me of Ellen Barkin in Ocean's 13.
Are you sending me photos or am I?
Yeah, I'm sending the photo.
Oh, okay.
It's a bit of a serve. I've just never seen this woman in my life.
Wait, that's her?
It says, may the bridges I burn light the way.
And also dying because the step and repeat behind her is like, Acura! You know, Jay Sapphire. Literally, I should have actually written a game that's like, is this a woman? Is this a random woman or is this Andrea Riseborough? Because I feel like you would fail. I know I would fail.
When I saw this photo of Andrea Riseborough at the Sundance premiere of Mandy in 2018, I was like, I've never seen this person in my entire life.
I should make this quiz for the general public. Like, I should make this quiz and like put it on Twitter, like as a Twitter thread or something, and be like, random woman or Andrea Riseborough. All right, I'm done with this.
She
you
is
keep
Mandy
talking
and Mandy.
About it.
I'm done with this too.
Okay. And
I'm
she's
sorry.
Also Leslie just... and Leslie.
She's Leslie and Leslie.
But her name is Andrea. Not Andrea. Okay. Andrea.
We have to play some calls.
Hi, Weekly. I am convinced that Austin Butler listens to this Tuesday's episode because it's Wednesday night and I just saw an article from Vulture that Austin Butler has actually thanked Vanessa Hudgens for prompting him to try out for Elvis. He calls her his partner at the time, and he says he owes her a lot for believing in him. So finally, justice for Vanessa. I mean, he could have named her, but whatever. And the Vulture article called her the Sneaker Night songstress, which is so true. Basically, what we're going to do is dance. Crunch, crunch.
Basically, what he's going to do is credit her.
Basically, what we're going to do is correct the record. Did he hear the podcast?
People were talking about this before us. I'm not giving us that much credit.
Hear the podcast. Austin Butler, hooligan.
He did finally say, I dated a woman named Vanessa Hudgens, and she changed my life.
No, he didn't say that at all.
That's exactly what
he did not say.
That was a hell of a paraphrase.
Somebody repeated his story back to him, which loved to do press. I hope you can clear up. You've talked about a moment since you had the role. It was Christmas time, and Elvis song came on. You were with a friend, and you were singing along, and your friend. And he goes, I was with my partner at the time.
This was an interview by Mark Olson in the LA Times. So Mark Olson did it.
This is a weird way. I got to say... It's one thing for us to call him out, but to directly call him to his face, to be like, please confirm that the person you were with was Vanessa Hudgens. We all knew it was Vanessa Hudgens.
I'm glad that Mark Olson got him on the record. I think he needed to get on the record. I'm glad that he was like, let's just say this. It's very like, and now we said it. You know, like, he needed to say it.
I owe her a lot for believing in me. She did believe in you, baby V. She had a clairvoyant moment. But it's just funny because nobody was like, heard these two stories and was like, well, I guess it wasn't Vanessa. Everyone was like, we know it's Vanessa. He's just being a little turd about it, you know?
Yes.
Do you know what I'm saying? Like, no one was like,
I know exactly what you're saying.
No one thought anything he said discredited Vanessa Hudgens' original story, which she told 25 times about telling Austin Butler to audition for Elvis, which she clearly told with his permission when she first was telling it, because I guess they were still together.
The fact that Vanessa Hudgens in all these headlines is being framed as a clairvoyant is the most tickling part about all of this.
I love the idea that she's clairvoyant versus just being like a supportive girlfriend. Like, if we just call all supportive girlfriends clairvoyant, that would be fun, you know?
Mm-hmm. Speaking of Vanessa Hudgens, basically what we're going to do is dance in two languages. Here's the first one.
Básicamente, lo que vamos a hacer es bailar. Okay, crunch, crunch, bye.
We got Spanish.
You know, I'm Duolingo Spanish right now.
I didn't know that. That's fun.
Yeah.
Are you doing well?
Yeah, I'm slaying.
Wow, you're reminding me of the only helpful thing my grandfather ever said to me, which was, well, why the hell are you taking French and not Spanish? Yeah. You live in Texas. And I was like, listen, Grandpa. Because I want to slay. Because
right.
I want to slay.
He was literally
right. Oh, I hate admitting that he was right.
He literally was right. Sorry, Grandpa. You're right.
He didn't even sound like that. But whatever.
He was correct.
In my memory, he sounds like that.
You live in Texas.
You're
like, au revoir, Grandpa. I'm going to Perry.
Oh, au revoir, Papa. No merci.
Hey, Lindsay, Bobby. Just wanted to provide you with the audio that Google Translate wouldn't give you for basically what we're going to do is dance in Hebrew. It goes, "Be'etzem ma she'anachnu hulchim la'asot v'lirkod." That's it. Crunch, crunch. Women do belong in sneaker night.
Okay, great. Love that.
Spanish and Hebrew, we've done it.
So okay, maybe like on. We... Right, like our like life's work to translate Sneaker Nights into every language is underway.
Basically.
Hi, Who Weekly team. Long time, short time. I had to pause the pod because you guys are talking about Salesforce, and I literally am in Salesforce every single day for my job. So you are right. Salesforce is a them. It's like the number one CRM platform for all businesses. So basically, it's a way for businesses to track their revenue, so all of their clients, and basically they can make all these big dashboards and like send out emails and make sure that they're contacting people. It's a crazy complex system, and there's so much to it, and I don't even understand half of it, but yes, it is a them. It's very important, and it's really vital for reporting on data. So I just wanted to share. Crunch, crunch.
So what you're saying is basically what we're going to do is report data. What?
I didn't understand a lick of that.
Yeah. I hope it's clear this is not an ad for Salesforce. I don't get what it does, and I don't think anyone needs to know that what it does.
Hey, Lindsay, Bobby, just listening, and you're discussing whether Madonna knew Bob the drag queen before the Truth or Dare tour revealer. And I am someone who listens to Bob the Drag Queen and Monet Exchange's podcast, and Bob proudly talks about how he and Madonna know each other from him, like, hosting some party for her and or being in a video or something, and they text. So she knew who Bob the Drag Queen was. I know that much for sure. All right. Good form, Bella Thorne. Bye.
Two other fun facts called in by people that we don't have to play. Amy Schumer opened for Madonna at MSG, and Amy Schumer and Madonna share a manager. So I think, and via other sources that shall remain unnamed, my assumption that Amy Schumer really was the ringleader of the table, maybe not with Bob, but, you know,
seems
with the
true.
Rest, seems pretty accurate.
Speaking of Madonna.
Hi, Who Weekly. So I just saw the Madonna biopic has been scrapped as she embarks on her world tour as per, I think, like Hollywood Reporter or something, or maybe Vanity Fair. I don't remember. But yeah, no more Madonna biopic. I don't know if this means it's on hold or it's never happening. Do we even know if Julia Garner ever said yes? Anyways, yeah, tell us about it. Okay, bye. One of everything really good.
I keep forgetting that this movie was very much an Amazing Amy project.
Oh, it was?
Yeah. It's Amy Pascal and Madonna together. I think Amy Pascal doesn't suffer any fools, as they say. I think she said you have to choose. Can't do both. Can't direct a movie.
In June 2022, Madonna tweeted on Instagram stories a poll. Movie about my life or a world tour? And her fans voted 62% world to 38% tour. World tour.
Nobody
the fans don't care about the movie.
She Nobody literally was like, should I go on a world tour? Should I do a movie? The movie, I think she knew, even in all of her recent kind of like delusion or whatever she's going through right now, it's like even she knew that a world tour would be more successful than any sort of movie she put any sort of, you know, effort into, especially with her as a director, especially because she went through 45 scripts, right? And it's all public info now at this point, which is even more annoying.
It's been publicly fraught for like the better part of the pandemic, right? At least it's unbelievable that like we had multiple press cycles about the, I don't know, the intensity the of
race,
this biopic, and now it's just
the,
over.
The
from the multiple screenwriters to the multiple right. Madonnas who were clamoring right. for this role, to the very right. awkward interview with Julia Garner after she won an Emmy recently. Was it an Emmy or a Golden Globe? And they were like, what's going on
and
with the Madonna biopic? And she
was
like,
Madonna hair,
I can't really talk about this yet. I can't talk about it yet. Or something. Whatever she said.
Also, interestingly enough, Demois had a, you know, tip posted in August of last year. Non-pleased, but I have it on good authority. The Madonna biopic might not actually happen despite casting. Apparently a nightmare production. I mean, of course it's a nightmare production. They said it's the biggest pain in their ass and they've ever dealt with because of the script and constant changes and what's needed in production. Blah, blah, blah. It's going to cost a lot of money. Even before Madonna said, I'll be doing the world tour instead, this clearly had a fraught situation going on behind the scenes. You know, I kind of believe this Demois tip.
Hi, Lindsay, Bobby, Timmy. It's early on Monday morning, and instead of getting up and going to work, I'm scrolling through Instagram. Oh, long time. But I came across this, like, easily, like, 10 or 12 screen posts from Todrick Hall, who you guys have definitely spoken about before. I don't remember if the decision was like he's a who or a them. He's definitely a who. Let's not kid ourselves. This, like, I feel like this is like a vast increase or improvement on the form that is the Notes app apology. It's like 15 screen personalized cursive handwritten novella that he has written has really just like some truly wonderful parts, including a line that the call is coming from within the house because there are queer people who are critiquing his hideous show. But anyway, I just really would love for you to dissect this handwritten Instagram screamed apology or whatever we're calling it. It feels very much like something you are all experts about. And if you could remind me, like, I know there's still a lot of drama with him and he like allegedly didn't pay people or whatever, but truthfully, I don't know or care enough to figure out what his problems are. So if you want to just sort of like give us all an update about what Todrick is up to, how unhinged these posts are, I would so appreciate it. Much love, promising young woman. Crunch, crunch.
Do you think that this is an improvement on the Notes app form? I would argue, even though it feels more personalized, because obviously it's like handwritten, there's something very kind of almost inauthentic about it in that way, and how kind of many pages we have here and how kind of desperate it is to like
it's alarming
lay it out
that's
like
what it
this.
Is it's stinkier it, you know
it, you, wait stinkier like alar-
it,
go,
it
go
reeks
on.
Of desperation, you know, like I'm too good for a Notes app, I have to be more authentic, I have to show myself here.
Is there something where like maybe your true self is stinky though? Like, is that what this is? Maybe being on a reality show, showing your true self and then writing like this true, real, honest letter and like everyone's like, ooh, stinky. Maybe that's saying something too.
Well, I don't think that's his intention. I think his intention here is to seem more authentic.
But what I'm saying is when you're like, I'm authentic and then you like say your truth, but your truth is like, everyone's like, that's your truth? Like you believe that being on a reality show, being the star of a reality show is like helping with anything at this point? Like you really think that's political? Like you think that that's like important?
So he released two handwritten pre-apologies, preemptive apologies, explanations in the span of the past week. There's one that's quite long. That's, I think, 9 slides. So 9 handwritten pages of Todrick's thoughts on his Instagram the day that his new show on MTV, Real Friends of WeHo, premiered. Then he released another 4-page note on his Instagram after. But like a lot of this was about, you know, I've already seen people shit talk this show. I'm prepared. The first episode of the show, which I watched, and I think you gave up on rightfully, he's already in defensive mode. He's like, no one likes me. I'm bullied all the time, but I'm such a successful queer person. And like, how dare you take that from me? And that's kind of the bulk of what he's saying in this.
It's also just such a bad stance to start with, like versus being like, I don't give a fuck. I'm successful. Like, I put out music. I'm a dancer. I'm doing all this stuff. Like, he really does, despite whatever people say about him on Twitter, does everything, does a ton, is starring on Broadway, is now on a reality show, like, really is a very productive person. So why come from a place of, like, my truth is that all I do is get stressed when people don't like me? I gotta say, that's YouTuber disease. That's, like, that's how you know that he was a YouTuber first.
Yes.
That you read, it's very reads the comments, you know?
People are making fun of Dorian Renaud and Brad Goreski as well, and James Vaughn, but they're not doing this. You know, like, Curtis Hamilton is the one who's coming out. He comes out basically on the show. He's, like, uncomfortable with his sexuality. The first scene with Curtis Hamilton, who is an actor who he's been on Insecure. He famously played Dr. Dre in the Surviving Compton miniseries. You know, like, he's been in a lot of stuff, and he's never been out as a gay man. He wanted to be, like, a leading straight man in Hollywood. The first scene with him is Issa Rae, literally his friend Issa Rae, being like, why are you doing this? Like,
why are you doing this show?
This is a bad idea. She doesn't say it on
camera.
You're
not going to trust Issa Rae? Oh, she doesn't even go on the show. She just, like,
she's on the show. She's on the show. But after they're talking, it cuts back to Curtis. And he's like, I remember when I first told Issa I was doing this, she was like, why are you doing this? This isn't like you. This is a bad idea.
Exactly.
Because Issa Rae famously wrote a memoir and then talked about how she regretted exposing too much of herself to the public because she's like, I'm a private person. Why did I do that? So she's very anti this sort of stuff. So he has a more, like, sympathetic narrative. Todrick comes in guns blazing, being like, everyone hates me and here's why they're wrong. And I'm going to go on Bob the Drag Queen's podcast with Monet Exchange, Sibling Rivalry, and I'm going to explain myself. And then Dorian is like, I don't like anyone. I'm a businessman. All these people are beneath me. James Vaughn is Jonathan Bennett's husband, and I still don't really know what his deal is. Joey Zawzig is the influencer who, like, is maybe one of the most insufferable people I've ever seen in my entire life. And then Brad Goreski is Brad Goreski.
Who I love, honestly.
The thing that Todrick Hall is trying to argue here is that representation, the mere fact of this show being representation for queer people in Hollywood, means that it is beyond criticism. And he thinks that because it's a queer show, that queer people cannot complain about it, which is a statement that people have been getting into a lot of trouble making lately. So his two things that he sort of comes to the defense of himself about in this note, in this series of notes, are one, people got mad at him for not paying his dancers. And he says, I love my dancers. I was a dancer in my entire career until 2010. I have never not paid a dancer I promised payment to. Ever. If a dancer has done gigs or videos without pay, it was discussed before they ever stepped foot into rehearsal.
Let's do some critical reading here. I have never not paid a dancer I promised payment to. So basically what he's saying is, I've paid dancers when I offer to pay them and when they're paid, okay? When it's a paid gig. But I've used lots and lots of dancers in an exploitative way, unpaid. Okay? Mm-hmm. There's a difference here in the conversation.
And that can mean a lot of things. That could mean he said explicitly, I'm not going to be paying you. Or he let the dancers assume they were going to get paid without saying they would. You know?
There's a lot of manipulation here. I think he does believe, oh, if I offered to pay you, I paid you. And if I didn't, I didn't. But there's a lot of nuance, a lot of stories within those lines. So, you know, best of luck to this statement. The other fascinating thing is he says, I own my home. I would never lie to fans about that. It was a huge accomplishment that wouldn't have been possible without your support throughout the years. Which is funny because he's directing this at haters, but then he's saying your support. It's like, okay, you're right. The support of the haters.
He's speaking to two communities at once.
I was renting the haters and purchasing the fans simultaneously, but now she's all mine. That's all I can legally say. Here's my thing. I do think that the rent thing what is actually, this actually does make it a little bit interesting when he wasn't quote unquote paying his rent. I actually do think that he's was in the right there, because if he was buying at the same time and there was also rent involved, maybe the back paid rent was him holding out because of the buying process being started or something, and something with like a contract going through. Like, I just feel like it's more complicated if he was like renting it and then he was like, I'm gonna buy it, and then there started to be some contract negotiations or whatever. So I'm never gonna side on a landlord, you know?
Never. No. Even if like, even if Todrick Hall's not paying his rent, like, whatever, go off king, don't pay your rent. The problem was, like, he kept saying I am, and then the like, how dare you, I own this house, and then the renter was like, no, you rent it. But he seems to have had every possibility to make it clear what was going on, but he keeps saying that it's a legal issue and he can't explain it. And I really don't understand how that could be a legal issue that he can't speak about. The confusing part is Todrick will talk about anything. So it's sort of like, no celebrity, no individual person, no private citizen, no celebrity is under any obligation to tell us the details of their life. Like, most of them want to. They want to tell us a lot, but they don't have to. I just find it weird that someone who is so inclined to give us the details of his life wouldn't provide the details of this house when it's the one thing that he's getting clowned on, and the one thing that he sort of has, like, legal backing for. Like, he shows Bob the drag queen and Monet Exchange the deed in the episode of the show.
Really? Stop. And yeah, a true, he's like, here's OG the deed. YouTuber would make an entire video about the process of buying his house.
That's what I find weird. That's what I find weird.
Wait, I didn't see these second notes.
The second note is really funny. And that the first notes begin with a cursive, a very like tight, not much letting cursive, not much line break cursive.
Wait,
then
where are you
looking? Becomes,
how many notes
at the,
are there?
At the top. Then the same first note kind of becomes all caps, sans serif block letters.
What's going on here? How
then
is this
he
an
squeezes
on...
them in. And then the second note is sort of that block lettering again, but it's a little more... Uh-huh. It's a little angrier. You can even see in, like, the way that he's writing, he's a little angrier.
No, no, but don't you think this is why this is worse, the original Notes app thing where you type it out? Because I can see the kind of anger in the writing, in the handwriting.
He really does have nothing to apologize for beyond the dancer stuff. And even that, I feel like any publicist would say, like, you don't have to say shit about this. Just shut up. You don't have to say shit about this. I think that Todrick Hall is, like, kind of like exactly the type of reality personality you want in a show like this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, and when I was watching the show, like, Todrick Hall is not even the weak link. Like, he is exactly the type of person you want in the show. And honestly, so is Brad Goreski. Curtis Hamilton, who has kind of an interesting story, but honestly, it was so sad that I was just like, this makes me uncomfortable. I am feeling like, why are you doing this? Did you get pressured into doing this to tell this, like, coming out story? James Vaughn is good because it's sort of like you're the less famous husband of, like, a kind of famous gay who, that's kind of funny, and you seem silly and harmless. Dorian Renault, who is the Butta guy, is like a great character here because he's like maybe the most successful, maybe the richest one of all of them. He comes with security to a party. Like, when the funniest thing I've ever heard in my life is when he gets to the influencer's house. God, what is the influencer's name? I already forgot. Joey Zawzig, when he goes to his house for an engagement party, he doesn't even know him. They notice that they're both wearing blazers, and he goes, we're giving similar.
How are you?
Joey.
Dorian.
Nice to meet you.
We're giving very similar.
I think that there is promise here because it's like, I find the dynamics actually sort of interesting, and maybe I will keep watching. But like, Todrick, that's what blows my mind. It's like, Todrick, you don't need to be defensive about this. Just let people discover it.
I just feel like each page adds to... like, adds against what you're trying to do here. These four extra pages, as if you wrote your pages, said your piece, read all of the comments about the pages, which is exactly not the point of this, wrote more pages. It's just, it's so, you do not need to defend this show. Mm-hmm. You're on it. You're getting paid. You're good.
Here's what I keep meaning to bring up, and I keep distracting myself, but.
Sorry.
I was sort of like, it's giving, I don't have a publicist, right? Because I always feel like
it
most publicists will tell you, don't say anything.
Shut up.
Right? Like, shut up. I think that that's not unfair of me to say. I think that most publicists say, like, don't mention it.
It's giving maybe a Bravo publicist who's got a lot on their plate.
Well, Lindsay, would you like to know why the publicist might be a little busy?
Who do they also represent?
An unknown actress named Michelle Yeoh. I was like, okay, publicist is busy. Juliana Plotkin. Juliana Plotkin has 11 clients per IMDb Pro. One of them is Michelle Yeoh.
Good sleuthing, Bobby. Oh my God, I love that. She's like at Sundance. She's like at something. She's putting together some Oscar thing. And she looks at her phone an hour later and she's like, no, Todrick, no, Todrick, no.
She's like at the Oscar nominations ceremony at 5 a.m. And Todrick's like, should I post? I'm posting. I'm posting unless you tell me no. I'm posting unless you tell me no.
Like, you have 5 minutes to tell me no.
I don't know how frequently they update these things. Maybe she doesn't represent Michelle anymore. Just, maybe she doesn't represent Todrick anymore.
We're playing. We don't know exactly, obviously, the deal. But I think that's extremely funny as a theory.
But the thing is, like, the more I think about this show, which I did finish.
Wait, you finished the episode, not the show.
The episode. Yeah. The second episode isn't even up yet. But, like, okay. It's a disaster, but it's not the worst reality show I've ever seen. When it first started, I was like, I'm not going to be able to get through this. I seem to be unraveling.
Is it better or worse than the Culpo sisters?
Oh, it's much better. It's much
really?
Better.
Really?
Really? Yeah. Yeah.
I hated the Culpo sisters.
Like, I also think that show. Like, it's the same thing about Housewives and how, like, in this season of, we've talked about this privately, like, this season of Housewives of Potomac is really fun for me because the fact that they're not close friends outside the show is, like, text of the show. And it's very important that, like, they have really close friends that are outside of the show. And so it keeps coming up that it's like, we're not good friends outside of this. Why are we acting like we're good friends? Some of them are, but not all of them. And in Real Friends of WeHo, some of them are good friends outside of the show and some of them aren't. And so it's sort of like the dynamics of someone coming in and being like, hey, I'm Dorian Renault, like a famous businessman. Like, I don't really belong here, but I'm being paid to be your friend or try to befriend you in this show. And things are going to be tense. And like, that's kind of interesting. But I don't begrudge any queer person who's like, I don't want to fucking watch this because who cares?
It's fascinating. The whole thing is, the notes are fascinating. The history of this person is fascinating, Todrick. Yeah. And I'm excited for the future. What do we have in the future? I feel like he'll be very successful. He'll remain very successful.
He just got Samsung Galaxy money. I went on his Instagram. He's doing an ad for Samsung Galaxy Foldy phone. Samsung of course they do. Big marketing budget for that phone. Sabrina Carpenter, time to call.
The foldy phone. Sabrina Carpenter still can't touch an iPhone.
Okay. Next call. Who Weekly is sponsored by Squarespace. We love Squarespace. We use Squarespace to advertise our show, to advertise our tour, to sell merch, to post great press that we get, to communicate with our listeners because there's an easy contact form. If we didn't have a Squarespace, your brand experience with Who Weekly would be considerably worse.
Considerably worse. Are you kidding? If I can't update, if I can't... Actually, you know what? Speaking of, I just realized the tour dates are still up. I got to take them off. The tour is over. Got to prepare for the next one. And you know what? I can do that in about 5 seconds. It will be so easy for me to do that.
Thank God their interface is intuitive and easy to use because we can make changes to our website very quickly and not stress out about it. We've used Squarespace for about as long as our podcast has existed. Can't imagine our website living anywhere else. And if you're intrigued, go to squarespace.com for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch your amazing website, go to squarespace.com/who to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. Lindsay, what Quince did you get when we got some Quince promo?
I got sheets.
Me too.
I got beautiful sheets. Beautiful sheets.
Oh, wait. No, I didn't. I lied. I got a duvet cover. Same thing, though.
A friend of mine reached out and said, you know how you say on the Quince ad that you have 365 days for returns? I once used that feature and it was incredible. It was so easy and great. And I said, wow, that's so nice to hear because Quince offers free shipping and 365-day returns. And that's part of one of their many offerings like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry.
Oh yeah, you're obsessed with the washable silk tops.
It's hard to... Washing silk is a pain in the tush.
Not from Quince.
Normally.
And all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands because they partner directly with top factories that can cut the cost of the middleman and pass the savings right on to me, Lindsay, and you. And they only work with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. We love that. So indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/who for free shipping on your order. And as she said, 365-day returns. That's quince.com/who to get free shipping and 365-day returns. Quince.com/who. Mother's Day. It's American Mother's Day coming up. I know the UK has their own Mother's Day in March, but our Mother's Day is coming
and
up.
And we don't just celebrate, you know, biological mothers. We celebrate, you know, people who you could consider mother and those who are mother figures to you. Could be anyone.
If there's a mother in your life who you want to celebrate on Mother's Day, get them StoryWorth. My parents printed out extra keepsake books for them. So now I have one of their keepsake books in my coffee table.
Oh, I love
of
that.
Their stories, which were, I mean, they were meant for my nephews, but works for me. I like having those stories.
You can read
Everyone
those stories.
Loves these stories.
Any
the
good stories in there?
Not that I'm willing to share.
Oh.
Well, you know what? Here's a fascinating story. I found out, I don't want to reveal what it was, but I found out what my mom originally wanted to do when she grew up.
Which was what?
She wanted to be a flight attendant.
Oh, wow.
It didn't work out. Didn't work out. We love StoryWorth. It helps you preserve precious memories and stories from your mom, mother figure, ma, mother.
Capital M,
all
mother.
All mothers for years to come. Every week, StoryWorth emails your loved one a thought-provoking question that you get to help pick. You can write the questions. You can choose pre-written questions. It's really as much you or your mother are willing to put in. StoryWorth makes it all a breeze. They just need to respond to that email, long or short. Doesn't matter how verbose your mother is. You get a copy of those responses as they're submitted. And then at the end of the year, StoryWorth compiles all of those stories and photos into a beautiful keepsake hardcover book that you can share and revisit for generations to come. You can print a copy for yourself. You can print a copy for the grandkids. You can print a copy for your friends. Print as many copies as you want. Families love StoryWorth. That's why it has more than 25,000 five-star reviews on Trustpilot, with millions of stories preserved since they were founded over a decade ago. So give all the mothers in your life a unique, heartfelt gift that you'll cherish for years. StoryWorth. Right now, save $10 on your first purchase when you go to storyworth.com/who. That's storyworth.com/who to save $10 on your first purchase.
Hey, Lindsay, Bobby, Timmy. On a recent episode, you talked about Andrea Riseborough being in the movie Possessor, which is directed by Nepo baby Brandon Cronenberg, son of David. He has a new movie coming out called Infinity Pool, which stars Alexander Skarsgård, probably them, Mia Goth, probably them, and Cleopatra Coleman. Other than having a really cool name, who is Cleopatra Coleman?
Is Mia Goth a them?
No.
You sure? Even with her face all over the everyone loved
no,
X
that's
and
Twitter brain.
Lucy?
That's Twitter
what's
brain.
It called?
No.
Oh.
Pearl.
What's
that's
called?
Twitter
Lucy?
Brain?
Pearl.
Lucy. That's
sorry.
Scarlett Johansson is Lucy. She's Pearl.
Okay. Sorry.
Originally, the clip people kept sharing of her was from Pearl, like, doing that dance and smiling. And now the clip that no one can stop sharing is her in Infinity Pool, a movie that's not even out yet, just screaming, "Where do you think you're going?" She has one of the most disarming voices in Hollywood. Like, there's like an extreme disconnect between her voice and kind of her demeanor that I think is endlessly like surprising to people. Especially like if you've never seen Mia Goth in anything and then like, oh, Mia Goth's in this. And then she opens her mouth. You're like,
where do you think you're going? Are we excited for the Cronenberg son? I didn't love the last Cronenberg movie, but I'm always intrigued by Cronenbergs, you know?
Yeah. I will
it
be
looks
seeing
scary.
Infinity Pool. It looks actually weird.
Yeah, right? Are all the Cronenbergs, like, in film? Yeah, probably.
Well, there's Brandon Cronenberg, and then there's Cassandra Cronenberg, and they all do movie stuff. I'm not sure.
Ooh,
some of them
tough.
Are just producers and, like, whatever, but...
That's tough.
There's Caitlin Cronenberg, who I think made a movie recently. God, what did she make recently?
Oh. From the mind of a Cronenberg.
No, that's kind of enough.
I know. That's what I'm saying. I think it's fascinating that we're just like all working in the same industry with the name.
She's crew on like Brandon and her dad's stuff. And also, didn't Brandon make Possessor? Yeah, Brandon made Possessor.
Yeah, so with Andrea Riseborough, which is why
with
this
Andrea
caller.
Riseborough. Yes.
Which is why this caller called. Possessor was apparently good and scary.
I never saw it.
I didn't see it. Too scary.
So we have Infinity Pool, which premiered at Sundance, and now it's coming out like instantly. It already had a distributor, I guess. So it stars Alexander Skarsgård, them. True Blood, them. Big Little Lies, them. Notorious, like, sexy creep who's, like, fun. Like, there's the disconnect between,
very
like,
funny.
He's so funny and cute on red carpets, but in every role,
knows.
He's, like, horrifying. Like, this most, just a threatening, scary man.
He leans in. He's so good in, like, Northmen. And when he mm-hmm. showed up that wasn't him. Sorry. That was his brother.
And his best friend is Jack McBrayer, a.k.a. Kenneth Purcell from 30 Rock, which is weird. Yeah, and also, I'm willing to say things that I won't say on mic there, but it's like...
Don't you dare.
Anyway, okay, actually,
that would make me like him even more. Like, wow. Me too. That would be a fucking, we would literally stand. Okay, I'm stopping you. I will say, though, I hope this doesn't jinx me saying this, but I feel like the Skarsgård family bros of actors, pretty good overall. All likable, all good, all seem like okay guys, considering.
Just finished the first season of Andor, finally. Took me months. Stellan's in it. Good. He's great.
Oh, Stellan. I
Daddy.
Mean, Mamma Mia
Daddy.
Too. Here we go again.
We love Bill.
All right, go ahead. Okay, so, but the star of the movie is actually not any of those people. It's Cleopatra Coleman.
Cleopatra Coleman. Haven't seen it, but apparently she's like, she's the main girly, one of the main girlies, right?
She's the girly. Yeah, because the little freak can't be the main girly. She has to be the little freak. The main girly is like, she's the one who's like, oh no, you know, like someone has to have this happen to them, right?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
So what's kind of funny about this is that you have Alexander Skarsgård, established name, right? Mia Goth, like up and coming scream queen, freaky, deaky, weirdo girly. And then you have Cleopatra as the third, I think probably the second most famous. I would say she's even more famous broadly than Mia Goth because she's been in so much stuff, and she's probably more famous in Australia because she was in the fucking show Neighbours, which all of the Australian actors who become international stars seem to have starred in for a little bit.
You're disregarding the popularity of The Last Man on Earth, a show that I watched. And
yeah,
she's
okay,
really
you're right.
good in that. And I
right.
do feel like a lot of people, when they see her face, would be like, what do I recognize her from? And it's that.
It's The
and
Last
the other
Man
thing
on
she
Earth.
Was in that people did watch and was lauded, even though I didn't, was Dope Sick. I know that was kind of like critically loved, but not really watched as much. I think people did, I don't know. Like, she was in that as well, which was kind of a big deal.
You didn't see social buzz about Dope Sick, but I think that has to do with a lot of reasons, but, right? Like, what are you going to meme from
right.
a show about opioid addiction? You know, like...
Right. And she's apparently, you said she's in the new Zack Snyder movie coming up. Like, that's how we know that somebody's on the prefaces.
I think this is...
What is it?
Precipice.
Not
precipice.
Precipice.
But I think that this to me, I'm trying to think of a parallel, but I can't, like my brain's broken. You have the three different forms where it's like Alexander as an established star gets this role and it's a big deal, premieres at Starbucks, stars at Sundance. Mia Goth is on the come up.
It premieres
and then
at Starbucks.
At Starbucks. Mia Goth is on the come up where it makes sense
Sundance
that she's
Starbucks.
Doing this. But then Cleopatra is kind of like somewhere in the middle where this is like the break from perpetual pretty good, famous, successful role to maybe something that could catapult her up or is just a signifier of the fact that she's on the come up. And I think that that's proven with the fact that her two upcoming things are a Zack Snyder like comic booky movie. And she's in what is giving to me Amanda Seyfried in the Elizabeth Holmes show. She's going to be V. Stiviano in the Sterling Affairs miniseries.
This is insane. That's insane. I fucking love Vista Viviano. I love her.
If that show is good, that's Emmy all day. Okay? My
I
little
will
rabbit.
Say,
what
I
is it?
At first I was a little
my
I was
silly
a little
rabbit.
Bit he's my silly rabbit. Lawrence Fishburne is playing former Clippers head coach Doc Rivers, Ed O'Neill as Donald Sterling,
I'm
which
telling
is like,
you.
Jackie Weaver as Shelley Sterling, and Cleopatra Coleman as V, my favorite face mask queen. Remember when she wore the,
when
big,
she wore
the
that
visors
face mask.
Out? I love her so much.
Can you tell me what your relationship with Donald Sterling is?
I'm Mr. Sterling's right-hand arm, man. I'm Mr. Sterling everything. I'm his confidant, his best friend, his silly rabbit.
His what?
His silly rabbit.
His silly rabbit?
Yes.
Is that what he calls you?
No.
Rest in peace, Barbara. No one would ever say what the way that Barbara just said what to silly rabbit. What?
His what?
When Cleopatra Coleman is V. Stiviano, Emmy voters are going to explode. They're going to be like, we have to do something about this woman.
Yeah.
That is going to be a shot for shot. Well, it's one shot. It's going to be a perfect impersonation of that. Like, are you kidding
me? It's one shot. It's one. If they don't leave Barbara in it and just cut to Cleopatra, I'm going to be so mad. We do not need another Barbara. Just leave Barbara. Just cut her in.
Mm-hmm. She is Australian, which, you know, we love here at Who Weekly.
Yes. And she was on Neighbours, as you said.
This is not nepotism, by the way. And what do we call this nepotism? Her mother was a costume designer from Jamaica. Her father is of Scottish descent and was a musician, writer, and director. Doesn't really count, I don't think. That's not enough.
Sure.
The nepotism scale, it's near the bottom. It's near the bottom. But
no,
she's
I would say it's not nepotism at all. There's no whiff of nepotism there. Sorry. No.
Hey, Lindsay Bobby. I'm calling in about a nepo sibling, a potential nepo sibling, Nell Mescal, who is Paul Mescal's sister. She is, I guess, trying to be a singer or something. She had a TikTok go viral because of Phoebe Bridgers last year. Phoebe was in the TikTok. And then she went on to like start promoting her music and all this stuff. And now, because Paul Mescal doesn't have social media, Nell is like doing all the posting about him reacting to the Oscar nomination. Anyway, I just think it's an interesting dynamic. I very much wonder if Nell's music will, you know, start to get a little blip because of this. But in terms of nepo siblings, the thing I think that's interesting about it is like, her place is very much there because he doesn't have social media right now. Like, it's helped her elevate her status more so than probably it would have. I mean, definitely it would have if he were online. Just thinking about Nell Mescal. Crunch, crunch.
Before we get into Nell Mescal, which I don't even think will be long because she's barely a who. She's like newly a who. I wouldn't call her an I think she's technically, I think she's legitimately a who very quickly. I want to make sure I'm saying Mescal right. So I'm gonna go to the pros, Riz Ahmed and Allison Williams, because apparently they got no pronunciations wrong when they did their Oscar nominations announcements.
Paul Mescal in After Sun.
Mescal. Paul Mescal.
Well, you have to think about it. It's an Irish. It's not going to be Mescal. Mescal. It's not. You got to say it like if you were saying an Irish accent.
Paul Mescal.
This actually tests my siblings' nepo theory, which is like good in the short term, awful in the long term.
Explain yourself.
Being a nepo sibling is not good, I don't think. You're always compared to, I think it's better when you're a different industry. Paul sings, but he's known to be an actor. She's a singer, so that's going to help or whatever. You know, he previously had a singer fiance, now doesn't. That was maybe helpful, now is not. But I just also feel like it's really hard to separate yourself from the sibling and like being known. Now, like we're getting called, we never were called about this girly before. Now we're getting a call because it's Paul Mescal's sister and like she's posting tweets about like his Oscar nomination and being excited and it's very sweetie.
You're on FaceTime but then with it's the family. Like,
who is this woman, right? She's a singer, she's a performer, and you're seeing tweets like, I didn't even know that Nell Mescal had a sister, which I think is very sweet, but like, okay, what? I still don't know who Paul Mescal is, and I've never seen him act. Sorry, Paul, but I know his sister's name is Nell, and she's hot as fuck and sings good, and I want to kiss her on the mouth. Okay, so that's very nice from sweet Jiba. Mm-hmm. GB on Twitter.
Nell retweeted that and said, this is sending me into orbit.
And to be fair, I did listen to her music and she has a beautiful voice. Oh my God, beautiful voice. And is like buzzy below the line on the Spotify system. You know, she's there. Mm-hmm. She's in the mix. You look at other examples of the siblings thing and it's mostly bad. It's mostly not great for the sibling. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's like, Chris Evans has a gay brother who acts. What does he act in? I can't watch any of that.
Right.
I think the music is helpful because accessibility-wise, I can find out whether or not she's a good singer in about 30 seconds.
Right. And whether you like her music. Right.
Yeah. When it comes to other celebrity siblings, it's like whatever their art form is, whatever their craft or talent is, it might take a little more work, you know, like a little more labor on my part. With Nell, I was like, okay, here we are.
I'm
And like the caller says, Paul doesn't have social media. So if I'm looking up, if I want to find like private information about the Mescal family, it's going to be on Nell's Instagram, TikTok, or Twitter. You know, like, because Paul isn't doing it. But again, the reason we're talking about her suddenly right now is because of this Oscar nomination. She made a lot of very cute content on Twitter and TikTok in which she shared not only the intimate screenshots of Paul's nomination journey, like when he was on a FaceTime with his family finding all this out. It adds like an element to Paul and her life that makes them a little more charming, where it's like, we love people who are close to their family. You know, like, it's just like, it's still sort of kryptonite for a lot of people where it's like, oh, and he likes his family. Oh, and he FaceTimes his mom. Oh, he has a good relationship with his little sister and his little brother. You know, like, it does double, triple, maybe quadruple duty for everyone in this family.
But also, to be clear, we're only seeing this because this was not in existence unless you were a Paul Mescal stan before literally the Oscar nominee day. It's not like she's constantly, she's not posting for him. She's not constantly posting photos of her brother. This happened one time that she like tweeted a few things and Instagrammed a few things. So I think while the caller has a point, it's interesting if this was happening on a larger scale, but it's really not. It's not like she's doing his social media. She's doing her social media and he's a part of her life. So she's including him, you know?
It's like a week long little cycle where people are charmed by Paul Mescal's nomination, and the only place to get the information happens to be Nell's social media.
About his family and kind of the excitement of, like, you know, the Irish people. I love his headline. Not such normal people. Paul Mescal's sister Nell, 19, is revealed as a rising music star who went from sitting in the toilets on her own at school in Ireland to a record deal in London.
I mean, the story's cute. She dropped out of school and then went to London to become a star, and now it's kind of working.
She lives in North London. She's released 3 singles and has a management deal with American firm Q Prime, which looks after Metallica, Muse, and Foals, as well as being signed to Manchester indie label LAB Records. Cool.
Like, I found the stuff with her family sharing the FaceTime cute, but the funniest thing, the absolute funniest thing to come from Paul Mescal's Oscar nomination is, I'm not going to pronounce it right, Leinster Driving Campus, presumably in Ireland, who posted on Facebook, massive congratulations to past student of Leinster Driving Campus, Oscar nominee and superstar, Mr. Paul Mescal. You have put Maynooth on the map. I don't think he has. And we are all so proud of your achievement so far. Enjoy Oscar night and hopefully you'll bring home the gold.
I love
that. They posted a photo of him, like, I guess finishing Maynooth. His driver's exam from like
years ago.
It's perfect.
They blot out his license. He's holding it. He clearly just got his license. It's very cute. The whole thing is cute. It's cute to come from a small town and then the town embraces you. That's the whole thing. That's
right.
I think that's why we're getting this.
The last point I was going to make is, I think that this is maybe not hugely because of this, but I think a part of the reason specifically the media is so charmed by this and willing to give this so much attention is because they're sick of the nepotism story.
Yeah, I agree. But also, like, these two as entertainers, but especially Paul, came quote unquote out of nowhere, and he's got a little bit of an underdog thing going on here for many reasons. But in the entertainment industry, the movie that he's in that's being lauded, After Sun, which is fantastic, is also kind of an underdog. So the whole thing, it's a first-time writer-director. It's her story. It's a sad story about her dad. He's starring in it. He's kind of an up-and-coming thing that people love and has done great work and did it. Like, he feels like this underdog. And that's why I think – and he is. And that's why I think the narrative is like embracing all of this stuff. But you're right, like, whether you're talking, if you're talking, oh, his sister maybe nepo sibling, that's really not what we're talking about. We're talking about the fact that he is so not nepo. He is the OG what you want to see, which is like coming from nowhere, you know?
Yeah.
Hi BLT, I'm sorry to give you more Eminem discourse, but not Eminem the rapper, Eminem's like the candies. They just said they're not going to do Stokes candies for a while, so they put it on pause. And the Stokes candies have been replaced with Maya Rudolph, which I think is a good choice, but like, the purple Eminem was too controversial. Or I don't know, like the green Eminem wasn't sexy enough anymore. Either way, I'm sad. We're missing out on a lot of good content. I don't know what the future holds. I hope it'll be good. Crunch, crunch on my M&Ms, but not the purple one.
Rule of thumb. Any brand who announces something crazy, weird, random in the month of January. That's a Super Bowl ad.
That's a Super Bowl ad.
Sorry. It's a Super Bowl ad in the making. Okay? The M&M brand, they're trolling your ass. Okay?
They're not getting rid of the lesbian M&Ms. They're not getting rid of the bisexual M&Ms. They're not getting rid of the, like, peanut M&M and the blue M&M.
They're not getting rid of the nervous M&M.
And the scared M&M. They're not.
The idea that the M&Ms are nervous, scared, weird, lesbian. Dumb. Like, those are the different categories of M&M.
Well, none of the M&Ms are straight. Like, all the M&Ms are definitely queer.
That's why it's funny that it's like, oh, this M&M is lesbian, when I didn't assume the rest of them were, like, you know, straight or even cis, you know? They're M&Ms. They're chocolate.
They're chocolates. All of the M&Ms, like, perfectly understand that gender is a social construct. Like, all of the M&Ms
yes!
have read every piece of literature, academic literature, about, like, gender.
Yes.
Anyway.
Also, you can't pause from the spokes candies. They are the M&Ms. That's what's in the bag. Okay, I can't talk about this anymore. This is like when Mr. Peanut was killed and then Baby Peanut came out.
Hi, I'm calling because I feel like coffee is a large part of Who Weekly culture, obviously with donkeys and Bobby Gotta having his Java. And so on that note, I was thinking about coffee shops, and I'm wondering if the brand Dutch Brothers is a who or a them. I live in a part of the country where they're everywhere, and they're, like, publicly traded, and I think they're in, like, a dozen states. But I have no sense if they're, like, a regional them or a who. I think they're a regional them, but, like, do other people in parts of the country know who they are? Like, I live in a part of the country where we also don't have Dunkin' Donuts, but I definitely know about Dunkin'. So, yeah, I'm wondering if Dutch Brothers is a who or a them. And I hope you guys can tell me. Okay. Crunch, crunch. ScarJo Yummy Pop.
Okay, I've never heard of this in my life.
Okay, I was going to ask you. I never heard of them until Christmas. When I was home in Texas for Christmas, there was a moment where I was like, I need to get out of the house. Like, I need to get out of, like, I need to get out of
I
this
love
house.
That moment.
I need to get out of this yeah. house.
That's when I go to Dunkin' Donuts. I'm like, who wants Dunkin'? I don't care. I'm going. And then I just
I was just like, I'm taking the car, and I was like, just going to drive around for, like, I don't know, 30 minutes. Like, is that okay? Yeah, fine.
Yeah.
And so Josh and I, like, drove around. Yeah. And I was like, just Google coffee place, because there's, I just want something different, because I've been drinking just hot coffee. I want a nice coffee somewhere, and I don't want Starbucks. Like, give me something local. And then Josh is like, what's Dutch Brothers? There's one a couple miles away. I'm like, never heard of it. Sounds great. Okay, cool.
But it's not local.
And it's not local. And I Google it. There's a really long line at the drive through, and it's like Christmas Eve. And there's a super, super long line at the drive through. And I'm like, okay, whatever. Fine. It looks like a brand new construction. I'm Googling it while I'm in the line. And I noticed that they're everywhere. And I've never heard of it. And then I looked at the map online. And if you look at the map, it's like, they really are, as the caller said, they're in at least 12 states. And then in Texas, they're kind of like all up and down I-35. Like,
well, I want to read to you, when you Google Dutch Brothers on Google, the people also ask is really revealing. First of all, about, like, the way that we feel about brands these days, but also just about this coffee company. Number one is, what is so special about Dutch Brothers coffee? Number two is, why is Dutch Brothers so popular? Number three, is Dutch Brothers a conservative company?
Mm-hmm.
Number four, is Dutch Brothers cheaper than Starbucks? Number five, is there a Dutch Brothers boycott? And then, does Dutch Brothers support police? So there's a lot going on here.
It is funny that people are, like, asking these questions. They're like, I'd love to not go to Starbucks every day. Do I feel ethically okay with this new brand of coffee that I've never heard of before? And so I guess that's why they're Googling these things.
Well, just it's just also like, these are things that people Google these days. I would also think they were local. I'd be like, delicious local San Antonio Java. And it's like, no, we're from Oregon.
Josh goes, is there a big Dutch population in San Antonio? And I was like, I don't think so. And then I Googled it, and it was like, oh, these are fucking everywhere. And they're based in Seattle, you know, like, or Portland or wherever they're from, somewhere in the Northwest.
It's right. Portland. Was a push cart in Portland or whatever.
It was a push cart. I love
God. Anything's bad. You know what? I'll take anything over Blank Street. I would drink mud. I drink literal sludge.
Well, mud is a brand, so you got.
Well, that's it's delicious, and I have drank it, and I did like it. But I mean, I drink actual mud.
Your aversion to Blank Street's really funny to me, because I only get the cold brew there, and I think it's totally good. Do you just not like the aesthetic, the vibe?
I hate the company. I hate the meaning behind it. I hate everything about it.
One of my favorite TikTokers used to work at the Blank Street, Blizzy McGuire.
No, I know. I follow them too. Their whole thing is like, we want to get rid of the barista and buy more expensive machines that do all the work for you.
Oh, okay. That's evil.
Fuck that. And they're still charging you so much. It's like, I'm spending $10 for a iced latte, blah, 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 because the barista is like touching it, pouring it, making it special for me.
I agree. It's like when a grocery store like replaces all their cashiers with self-checkouts and you're like, this is so fucking bleak and dystopian.
I hate that.
Okay. But Dutch Brothers, I think 1, 2, 3... Who?
Hey, Bobby, Lindsay, and Timmy. You guys talking about the Beyonce hotel and comparing it to a Tetris block brick got me thinking, can you rank the Tetris pieces from who to them? Good luck. You know, I don't know if they actually have names or anything. But, yeah, crunch, crunch.
Okay, okay. I think the whoiest block is the, oh my God, this is hard because they're all kind of them blocks because like it's the game, but like the whoiest block is the O block because it's like as you want it.
Yes,
you want it, but it's rare. You always want it and you're like, where is she? Like, where's this fucking O block? Mm-hmm. where's the four blocks? Where is she? And she never arrives,
the square.
And then
yeah.
I would say the themiest is the I block because she's always there and you also want her. So you're like, oh God, there she is, I block. Here's to save me. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And then I would say the second whoiest is T block. And then I would say the J block, L block, Z block, and S block are all kind of in the same mix. Okay, you go from who to them.
ZS, same. JL, same. But I think it goes from bottom to top. O block, the squares.
Uh-huh.
T block, uh-huh.
The T.
LJ, then the L and J. And then the L and slightly the J. Above SZ.
Yeah.
Because SZ, like, just the aesthetic, like, you look at that and it's giving Tetris. You know, like.
Sure, but those are, and I would say I'd agree with you because those are the villains. Those are the villains.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Those are the villain blocks. Those are the villains. That's the Ursula of the game. Yeah.
Exactly.
She's coming for you.
So
O,
T, LJ at one.
Yeah.
SZ.
ST. One. SZ.
And then
right.
I at the top.
I
is the themiest.
Yeah, it's true.
Absolutely. That was very easy. I'm going to actually put the Tetris music over that.
Although. No, it's okay. No, that works within the. No, I don't know. I'm just thinking like, which one of these blocks, when I see it, I know I'm playing Tetris. I block, I don't really know. It's just a straight line. S block, I'm playing Tetris. Like, I know I'm playing Tetris. T block, I know I'm playing Tetris.
Well, if that's the question, which of these silhouettes is giving Tetris more strongly than any other one? I think it's T. I don't even think it's S or Z. I think it's T.
You think it's T? I kind of think it's T-block. S or Z. But okay, so should we bump T up?
I think T block is number one if we're going that way. I guess you're right.
Oh,
we were saying
God.
Sort of like, which are our favorites? Which are the most helpful?
Yeah, we're talking about in
whatever.
The game. And then I was thinking about meta kind of outside the game. So maybe it's from who to them. O block, J block, L block in one thing, mm-hmm. then Z block, then maybe I block,
then
Z block, S block together, then T block at the top.
Yeah, okay, that works.
Mm, okay,
great. I'm happy with that. Next call.
Hi, Lindsay, Bobby, Timmy. I'm calling you in the middle of the night because I can't stop thinking about this question. I've been watching Traitors, which, you know, y'all, I don't know if you've talked about it or not, but it is a smorgasbord of who's and nas. And my question is, we know from the show that Alan Cumming knows who Ryan Lochte is, but does Ryan Lochte actually know who Alan Cumming is? Also, has Ryan Lochte gone from a who to a na? I would say yes. I mean, I know he's in the Olympic then, maybe. Anyway, I don't think Ryan actually knows who Alan Cumming is. Would love your thoughts. All right. Crunch, crunch. Bye.
Ryan Lochte, never been more charming as he is in The Traitors. Truly one of his best showings on television to date. Right?
I guess. Traitors, I had to stop watching. I was like, I don't know
what's
happening
I watched
here.
The entire thing. So I think I can tell you. Yeah, I had to know. Yeah, Not that I knew who the traitors were the whole time. It's a very flawed game show. I'm not a fan, but I did watch the entire thing. Yeah, of course. And it gets better. It gets much better towards the end. But you shouldn't have to watch six episodes. You shouldn't have to watch six episodes to show, for a show to get good. I agree.
Right. As our pal Steven said, once there are fewer people on screen, it makes a little more sense. But I was just sort of like, why is anyone murdering anyone? I just didn't really understand.
No, it doesn't make any sense. The show is bad. It doesn't make any sense. I don't understand why people like it. It's like one of the most like poorly designed shows. The Mole Forever. Bring back The Mole. The Mole rules.
Please. The Mole is perfect.
But let's answer the question though.
Does Ryan Lochte know Alan Cumming? Did he know Alan Cumming?
I mean, he doesn't now. He knows now. But did he know before? Absolutely not.
No.
Brian Lochte barely knows if he has health insurance and what that would be. You know, I don't think he knows who Alan Cumming is. He's not really aware of things like people, their names, or where they're from, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. So that's the end. Ryan Lochte doesn't know Alan Cumming. I'd love to know how long, like, Ryan retains information.
Yeah, his recall's not great.
How long does
stuff stay in there? Does he have better recall than me? Oh, probably.
How long does stuff stay there? It's sort of like...
How long does stuff stay in there? Well, you know, when you swim for that many years, like, stuff just kind of floats out, right? Like, the water.
I sort of think about his memories and, like, his brain power as sort of, like, stuff going bad in your fridge, where it's like, did he seal it well? Did he just sort of, like, rest a piece of plastic wrap over this? Like, how well are we doing? Yeah. How well is this memory doing?
Is it, like, just in a bowl in the fridge, which I've done? You know, it doesn't work that well. That's not really how it works.
Yeah. Thank you for listening to Who's There, our weekly call-in show. Keep calling in at 619-WHO-THEM to leave questions, comments, and concerns. Thank you to Katie and Eric of The Who's for providing our Rita theme song on Tuesdays. Thank you to Timmy, our research and editorial assistant, for researching and editorializing. Support us on patreon.com/WhoWeekly for bonus episodes, commentaries, sometimes Discord server, all sorts of stuff. You can also get the audio only on Apple Podcasts in the app. Just click subscribe, and we'll see you on Tuesday. Have a great weekend, everyone. Bye. How long does stuff stay in there?
So I just got pushed a news story that charities can now register websites under the new digital domain .giving. So not only is it giving dots, it is now .giving. Crunch, crunch.
Hi, Who Weekly. Long time. Just wanted to call with a couple Rita bits, because I am lucky enough to know someone who is very closely associated with Rita. First thing is that I now know the origin of Rita's incredible phone chain thing. It was something that was sent to her for free, and she super loves it and is emotionally attached to it. And there are two others in existence. The other note is that I did play the Rita song for our mutual friend, and she loved it. Anyway, crunch, crunch. Bye-bye.
Hey, Who Weekly. So once my roommate invited two random guys over for a hookup off Grindr who didn't know each other, and one walks in through the door, and he's like a short, cute, scruffy boy, and then shortly after, a taller, less cute boy walked in, and I burst out laughing. And I was like, oh, my God, you're fucking the chain smokers. And it was incredible. But in all seriousness, that is the configuration. The shorter one is the hot chain smoker. I don't know which name that is for you guys, but it's the shorter one. The taller one is the not hot chain smoker. Life imitates art. Okay, French French, bye.
Hi, Lindsay, Bobby, Timmy. On behalf of high school English teachers across the land, Times New Roman is absolutely still required because of the Modern Language Association guidelines for how one formats a paper. So Times New Roman, 12 forever. Although when I make my own handouts, I don't use Times New Roman. I've gone to Alice. Or Cabin Condensed. Anyway, long-time listener, first-time caller, crunch, crunch.
Hi, Who Weekly. Please do Mother of the Week every week since you're a lesbian.